Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's 100% natural, hormone-free, and side-effect-free. Here's how it works. The app analyzes daily changes in your body temperature to find your fertile window, so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. Natural Cycles is a clinically proven, non-hormonal birth control option that's 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. No synthetic hormones, just science. And if you're ready to start family planning, switching from preventing to planning a pregnancy is as easy as tapping a button. Plus, the Natural Cycles app makes tracking fertility easy. You can measure your temperature trends using an Oura Ring, Apple Watch, or our Bluetooth thermometer, which is free when you sign up for an annual subscription. Join over 4 million registered users who are taking control of their fertility naturally. Save 15% when you sign up with code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com. That's Radio 15 for 15% off today.
A number of your colleagues on the Democrat side have said, well, there's an OLC opinion here. We don't need to talk anymore. There's an OLC opinion. It says you can use the auto pin. That opening, the opening paragraph of that OLC opinion says you can use the auto pin, but only when the president directs that you do so under his decision-making power, right? It is very clear again and again that the president actually has to make the decision. That cannot be delegated to a staffer or an advisor. And there's no indication here that anyone other than staff were making these decisions.
Big questions facing the Biden administration, Joe Biden, the use of the auto pen, which was, there's just a lot of questions surrounding how much knowledge he had, the presidential authority vested in Joe Biden on behalf of the voters of the United States. Was that manipulated because he wasn't of sound mind? It's important to ask the questions, and part of that process is being done by Congressman Eric Burleson, who joins us once again. He represents Missouri's 7th Congressional District. He's a member of the House Oversight Committee, as well as the Freedom Caucus. Congressman, welcome back to the show. Thanks for being with us today.
Great to be on, Annie.
So I want to give you just the floor here to talk about the efforts of the Oversight Committee to look into the Biden administration. Who knew what, when, how bad was it? Maybe it wasn't bad at all. You got to ask the questions to get the answers. What is the pursuit of this information on behalf of the Oversight Committee?
Yeah, I think we owe it to the American people to figure out what happened. This is one of the biggest scandals, I think, in American history. You have a situation where a team of people sidelined a president. Took advantage of his cognitive, lack of cognitive functioning, mm-hmm. and became basically the president, acting president. So that's disturbing. It's something that's worth investigating. And so when you have Democratic, what was the video that was done by Project Veritas, where David Hogg said that Anthony Bernal was basically, someone to be scared of, and that he was the one that was running the show behind the scenes. When you look into him, he was working for Jill Biden, right? Not even mm-hmm. directly working for her husband. It's kind of disturbing that you've got somebody in that position that's deciding which executive orders get signed and when to use the auto pen.
Yeah, certainly. Congressman Eric Burleson speaking with us right now. Fox News reports that the House Committee on Oversight, of course, you understand that, and government reform, Chairman Comer issued a subpoena Thursday to Anthony Bernal, who you just mentioned, former assistant to the president and senior advisor to the first lady, to appear for a July 16th deposition. It comes as part of the committee's investigation into the alleged cover-up of former President Joe Biden's mental decline and potentially unauthorized executive actions. What kind of cooperation is the Oversight Committee getting from these individuals who you'd like to ask questions?
We're not getting cooperation. So the fact that we're going to have to subpoena him is the fact that he's not cooperating. So my guess is that we will probably come in, we'll probably do what we did with Hunter Biden, where we subpoena him and he comes in for a deposition. And then after the deposition, we will have him come through an open hearing. Mm.
Representative Burleson, this is Ryan Wiggins. What are your Democrat colleagues, how are they reacting to this? Are they outraged? I can't believe that we would even ask these questions, that obviously Joe Biden was in charge of this administration. Or are they kind of silently going along with it because they know, yeah, there's probably an issue here.
No, what they're going to do is they're going to scream about Donald Trump. So
it's a day that ends in Y.
Yeah, that's every moment they get. Anytime the camera's turned on, they're not going to talk about this. This is just an embarrassing, you know, tale for the Democratic Party. They're going to focus on whatever they can make up about Donald Trump.
Yeah, it doesn't even matter. Like, I don't think that the American people are kind of tired of that. I have to think that there are Democrats that understand what's at stake here. And I'm always curious as to how big did the operation of making the Biden administration seem like the Joe Biden administration, like how many people had to be involved, who had to keep the game up? Are you, as you're digging into this, being more convinced that it's a bigger operation or a smaller operation?
Yeah, I think it was a small team, but his staff, like in some of the comments, they said that they did bypass him. Whenever they used the auto pen, and they used people that were within his inner circle as go betweens. He was not directly informing or giving his consent directly to the person that was using the auto pen, which is very disturbing.
Congressman Burleson speaking with us right now. He's a member of the House Oversight Committee. As you mentioned, Bernal a little bit earlier, who has been issued a subpoena, is the senior advisor to First Lady. I think that I saw some articles maybe refer to him as her work husband. What is the Jill Biden? Is she like way down the road subpoenaing Jill Biden, making her talk? Is she like one of the last people you go to?
Yeah, typically that's the what in an investigation, that's what we do, is kind of go talk to people around the edges as you're making your way towards the center. And that way you can determine who's telling the truth. And it also gives you insight as to what questions that you should be asking.
Yeah, that makes sense. I don't know if you want to make predictions as you're continuing to work through this, but whatever your biggest intuition is regarding how much of Joe Biden's administration was managed for him, are these crimes that were committed?
I think that what was really appalling is really the fact that, you know, we have in place in the Constitution a provision directly addressing this situation, and it wasn't being utilized by cabinet members, or, you know, anyone who had the responsibility and the authority to do it. And that because of that, but I feel like the reason why they didn't is they thought, well, it's either we get rid of him or he's in a cognitive state that why get rid of him when you could just do whatever, right? There is no one minding the farm. So I think that's what was happening. That's probably the attitude of everyone around him.
More from the Fox report, Fox News report. Another former senior White House aide, Neera Tanden, agreed to comply and voluntarily testified for 5 hours behind closed doors Tuesday. Tanden, the former director of Biden's domestic policy council, told the committee that she was authorized to direct auto pen signatures, but was unaware of who in the president's inner circle was giving her that final clearance. She also reportedly vehemently denied that there was any cover up of Biden's mental state. So that was a closed door questioning. And I presume that you were in that closed door conversation. What did you make of her testimony?
You know, I wasn't able to attend that, but I'll get the deposition.
Mm-hmm.
But what I would make of it is that she basically is, I don't think that she would have been the person that would have been a part of the cover up. So she probably can't necessarily speak to it because this is such a huge secret that it would have been his inner circle that was keeping it the cover up. But look, they could only cover up so much because we all watched this happen on television.
Yes.
Over the last, you know, 6 years, we watched the mental decline. Conservative news outlets would air footage of him wandering into the forest but the mainstream media didn't run any of that, right? So until until after it was over with, and now they're writing books and selling books about it. But yeah, this I think that if there was a cover up, it would have been done at the most inner circle point,
right.
And that's what we have to get to.
Yeah, a lot of plausible deniability for those other members who would be surrounding that inner circle. Eric Burleson speaking with us right now, congressman from Missouri's 7th District. Before we let you go, I just want to get your thoughts as somebody who's been on the inner circle with the Oversight Committee, watching the Jake Tappers of the world now come out and say, you know, we should be questioning the president. I think it's because he's talking about Donald Trump, but he's also profiting off of a book that's like, guys, I don't think Joe Biden was okay. You're talking about how the rest of us, we all saw it with our own eyes. He was in a position of power. He's certainly not the only one in the media who have abdicated those responsibilities. But just wanted to get your thoughts on the state of journalism in this country today when it comes to one president versus the other.
Yeah, it's really sad that there's not real journalists out there, people that are actually investigating things. We shouldn't have, for all of the things that were happening with the Biden administration, even outside of his cognitive functioning, all of the corruption, right? So why is Oversight Committee having to fight an administration to find out that money was being wired from all of these people overseas through these shell companies that would end up in either Hunter Biden's account or Jim Biden's account, and sometimes would flow from there to Joe? Why should oversight staff have to do that? That should be that when the press that is their number one job and role, and yet they weren't doing that job. And so, yeah, I think that they've lost all credibility.
Yeah, certainly. It does deserve to be called out every time we have the opportunity to do so. Congressman Burleson, thank you for the time today. I look forward to reconnecting with you as you continue on with your Oversight Committee duties to give us an update. A lot of people do want to know the truth of what took place during the Biden administration, and we're grateful that you are a part of pursuing it.
Thank you, Annie.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Eric Burleson, Representative Eric Burleson, Missouri 7th Congressional District Representative, also a member of the House Oversight Committee. All right, let's take a quick break. Don't forget to vote in the YouTube live chat poll. How much destruction did the airstrikes cause to Iran's nuclear facility? Probably going to say Iran and Iran differently every time I read that poll. I wonder if that could be a poll. Do you say Iran? Do you say Iran? Are there any other ones?
Or Iraq or Iraq.
Or Iran. In
or
the past tense. That's what you call the nuclear sites. Can we joke about it too soon?
Yeah, a little too soon.
For you? Man. Setback for months, setback for years, or obliterated. Annie Fry YouTube channel. Vote. Tell us what you think. Give us your comments, and you can let us know. Like Erica said, I think it would be naive to believe that the site was destroyed completely, as there's always the chance of them revitalizing what they've achieved so far. It was still a setback by years. Let us know your thoughts. We'll be right back.
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's 100% natural, hormone-free, and side effect-free. Here's how it works. The app analyzes daily changes in your body temperature to find your fertile window, so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. Natural Cycles is a clinically proven non-hormonal birth control option that's 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. No synthetic hormones, just science. And if you're ready to start family planning, switching from preventing to planning a pregnancy is as easy as tapping a button. Plus, the Natural Cycles app makes tracking fertility easy. You can measure your temperature trends using an Oura Ring, Apple Watch, or our Bluetooth thermometer, which is free when you sign up for an annual subscription. Join over 4 million registered users who are taking control of their fertility naturally. Save 15% when you sign up with code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com. That's RADIO15 for 15% off today.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. We talked a little bit about the mayor in New York City a little bit earlier. I was talking about how socialism ends up being kind of a hobby, I think, for most of the time well-intended people, preyed upon by attention, power, money seekers who understand how to manipulate those people, specifically through social media algorithms. All right. Do you consider, I kind of think about Mamdani, the candidate for mayor in New York City, who is a Democratic socialist, very proud to be. I don't know that it's the worst thing to happen right now.
You talking big picture?
Yes. Eric Adams, I think Eric Adams has been a good mayor. I think Eric Adams is probably about as good as New York City is going to get.
Well, I agree with that.
So Andrew Cuomo's dropping out, I believe. I think I read that.
Yeah, he is.
Okay.
He announced.
That's right. Okay, good. So it's Democrat socialist or former Democrat independent.
Right. And Cuomo actually said the reason he's dropping out is because he's like, look, this guy's way too far left.
Yeah.
I'm a lefty and that guy's left
of
me.
He can't be a part of handing New York City over to this guy.
Right.
I think on the whole, you know, it really all depends on how it turns out, which is easy to say. But I think on the whole that there is an opportunity for the country via New York City to be reminded how crazy the left is.
I do, too. And the minute this happened, I was actually talking to Mark Cox, I think, yesterday morning about this, that if Mamdani does what we're expecting him to do, which is basically free rein on crime, all the stuff that you expect, like that stuff, try to socialize food, like just the craziest stuff. If all that is actually implemented and nobody's there to slow it down at all, you're going to see the far left dream kind of collapse into crime right in front of them. And then big picture, I would think this is actually pretty good for none other than Elise Stefanik, who may run for governor of New York against Kathy Hochul and will look like the sane one in that race. And that overall could be very, very good.
The election is this November. So the president's successes, I think a lot of people are thinking like the election campaign season is going to start about November because everyone's thinking midterms. But for New York City, it's happening this November.
Yeah.
So I really do believe that Donald Trump's successes in the administration will have a great effect on legitimizing Eric Adams. There are people in New York City who like Donald Trump. He has a certain ability to do what? Bring people to the polls. And if he goes into New York City and makes a point to make sure New York City doesn't go into the hands of a Democratic socialist, that could be energizing. And if that is defeated in November, again, it's not far. I mean, Kamala Harris is pretty Democratic socialist. She would probably like, I wonder what part of Mamdani's policies that she was like, she would be like, well, that is un-American.
Yeah, I really don't know. It's the same stuff that she, though, ran and lost on. You know, the defund the police, getting people out of jail who were rioting, the BLM stuff. You know, that stuff that really has haunted her, the lack of border, although immigration is going to be another big issue in New York. It's not the lack of the border. But that those same issues haunted Kamala Harris enough that she started moving away from them in the 100 days she was running for president. So you really don't know who Kamala Harris is because she changed her position on so many things in her presidential run.
How do you think it's going to turn out? We have no way to know.
The race, the actual mayoral election. I thought Cuomo would do better than he did. So that tells me that Mamdani is probably going to do better than I thought he would, which means he'll probably be the mayor.
It's also a Democratic primary, though.
And it's there's the most whole, passionate people.
There's a whole host. Yes, there's a whole. And it's not a regular election year. So it's like it's not a special election, but it kind of feels like it. You could pour a lot of attention into it. It gets a lot more attention than it would if it were during a midterm or a general. But when it's November, isn't New Jersey having their election this November as well?
Yeah, it's Citarelli.
So there's a lot of attention that's going to be centered around that area. I really think Donald Trump's going to have a big presence in the home stretch. And the Democrats did not have good turnout for their primary. Overall, it's not like it was an impressive amount of people who came out and voted in this primary. We're not factoring in people who would vote for Eric Adams in this primary to run against Eric Adams.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, just everyone take a deep breath. Maybe this turns into an opportunity for the country. And I think Donald Trump's emphasis on helping right the ship, if he has successes, if he's able to go in November and say, listen, I've been doing this for 10 months. Look at what we've done. And Mamdani is basically saying we are going to push back on the Donald Trump administration at every single turn that we can.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's a
He's
point.
Not backing off of
No, it's a point of policy to counter Trump.
Yeah.
That brings people to the polls.
He's positioning himself as the anti-Trump candidate. He's also very charismatic. That's why I think he possibly could pull that off.
Yeah. I'd be very nervous if I were in New York City.
Would too.
What do you think?
I think that he has a very strong chance of winning. Now, I saw some numbers. You were talking about the numbers were down, and then the people that pushed him across the line, the way that this map described it is they were all on the border of the main New York City. They were the border boroughs or whatever it is, however it's divided up. And they were mainly rich, affluent college liberals. And they're the ones that came out in overwhelming numbers to push this guy across the line to get him in there. Everywhere else in New York didn't vote for him. And so it makes me wonder maybe if he's not going to get the vote.
Who's more passionate?
I'm really glad you brought that up because I was looking at that same thing yesterday, that a lot of the policies that Mamdani is running on are things like rent control, grocery stores run by the government, stuff that's intended, price controls on other housing issues stuff that's intended to help the less affluent, the poor, or even the middle class in New York, which looks very different than here.
Yeah.
It's like you're under 50,000. But all the people, I shouldn't say all, the majority of the people under $50,000, which would be who those policies are designed for, voted against Mamdani.
Yes.
So it's, again, the elites saying, we know what's best for you, and the poor going, no, you don't.
Well, yeah, they're the people that have experienced these sorts of things in the past and have realized this isn't working for us.
Chicago has to be looking, like, side-eyeing New York City like, we've been there. Not really going great. When we come back, Giano Caldwell is going to be with us. He is, of course, you see him as a Fox News political analyst. He's a Chicago guy. I love hearing him talk about Illinois because he talks in such a important, I'll just say, like, North sense. He comes from Chicago. He has common sense, but he also has a tragic story behind. He lost his brother. His brother was gunned down. He was 18. By senseless gun violence on the streets of his hometown of Chicago. That's how he writes it. And he's got a new book out. And it's a devastating story.
I, J.B. Pritzker,
do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
It was in 2019 when billionaire J.B. Pritzker beat out Bruce Rauner for Illinois' governor. Now sources telling ABC 7 the Democrat is vying for a third run. The announcement expected on Thursday, a move political experts say wouldn't deter a potential White House campaign for one of the Trump administration's most vocal critics.
June 24th of 2022 is when Giano Caldwell lost his brother Christian. Now J.B. Pritzker wants to run for a third term, which, you know, I wonder how many people who vote for J.B. Pritzker were participating in a No Kings protest recently. We're going to take a very quick break. We're going to get to Giano Caldwell here in just a minute. Don't go away.
Fun fact, you can't get pregnant every day. You're only fertile for 6 days, ovulation day and the 5 days leading up to it. Natural Cycles is the only birth control app that can pinpoint your fertile window by analyzing your hormone-driven temperature trends. It's more than just a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Thanks for being with us this afternoon. I want to get directly to our guest. Excited to have Giano Caldwell on with us. He is the founder of the Caldwell Institute for Public Safety. Of course, he's a Fox News political analyst. I stop and watch when he speaks. Giano, welcome to the Annie Fry Show. Thanks for being with us this afternoon.
Thank you for having me. I've been waiting to talk to you for a long time now.
I know.
We've been trying to put it together for weeks now.
I appreciate you so much. I'm an Illinois resident. Really, this show pretty much is full of Illinois residents who move across the Mississippi River to work in a red state. And we pay very close attention to what's happening in Chicago. The governor has supposed to announce, I think today, if he hasn't already, that he's going to run for a third term. I thought that was like king stuff, but apparently not in Illinois. You know all about Chicago. You lost your brother to gun violence in Chicago, and you've got a book out about it. We're going to talk about that in a second, but I want to get your thoughts on J.B. Pritzker's announcement that he's potentially going to run for a third term.
I don't understand why, and honestly, he should be more running for mayor of Gotham City than the governor of Illinois, and the truth of the matter is he's created a more dangerous state by endorsing and pushing forth with the Safety Act, which we know has no safety in it. It ended cash bail in Illinois, but there's so many issues with it, including the fact that people who have potentially murdered people who are accused of being murderers with these ankle monitor bracelets, if they go out of range, police can't respond for 72 hours. They are not allowed to. So there's a lot of dysfunction in the policy in which he supported. And, you know, we can talk about the mayor too. Mayor Brandon Johnson has been an absolute disaster. I never thought it could get worse than Lori Lightfoot. I had no idea that that was possible, but certainly it is. And now he's the worst polled mayor in Chicago history. I mean, Illinois, if we really want to change direction, we got to put in brave politicians, conservatives who are willing to use their voice and make the tough decisions to get the state on the right track, regardless of them being reelected. And I think that's the principal point. It cannot be individuals who are going into these offices who are concerned about being reelected. You have to be bold. You have to be courageous. And you have to act with the people of Illinois in mind. And a lot of these politicians, they absolutely had failed that critical mission.
Yeah. And, you know, the story, the consequences are tragic. I've seen you talk about the loss of your brother on Fox News multiple times. And you've written a book, The Day My Brother Was Murdered. And I'm going to highlight here, just to broaden this understanding for people who are listening right now, that Christian, your brother, was one of over 150 people murdered across the United States on that day alone. So, yes, it's a specific problem to Chicago, Illinois, but it is a broader problem. What is, you've looked at this, you've analyzed it. What is your response, and do you have solutions?
Absolutely. And as I talk about in my new book, The Day My Brother Was Murdered, My Journey Through America's Violent Crime Crisis, I covered 9 families, including my own, who all were murdered on that day across the country. People like James, who was an Army veteran in Philadelphia. He had PTSD, so he would oftentimes at 1, 2 a.m. go to the park because he couldn't sleep. On June 24th, he did what he usually always does. He went to the park. At this time, there were a bunch of teenagers and some kids that were younger than teenage in that park, and he said to them, "What are you all doing out here this late? You should go home." And what happened? They beat him to death with a traffic cone. Or Catherine. Catherine was in Texas. She was a mother, grandmother, 65 years old, wife, chemical engineer, leaving her job, going down the freeway when a drug deal went bad. And the individuals, one who's selling the drugs, one buying the drugs, they were looking to rip each other off. And when they discovered that, they chased each other down the highway, shooting at each other. And Catherine became a victim of violent crime. It is without question devastating what has happened throughout our country with this violent crime epidemic. And I knew it was absolutely important because we all know how bad it is, but it was important to talk about solutions. So I talked to people like John Walsh from America's Most Wanted, Dr. Drew about the mental health crisis in this country and its contributions to the violence, Sean Hannity, many others, educators, faith leaders, because this is going to be a team effort to change the trajectory of this country without question.
Well, you know, and your voice being lent to this and being able to speak through heartache, I can't imagine I'm not even going to pontificate on what that emotion is like, but to be able to turn it into something that could offer solution to avoid anybody else to have that same experience that you and all of these other families that you highlight in the book, The Day My Brother Was Murdered, My Journey Through America's Violent Crime Crisis. Going back to Illinois, Giano, you've talked about, you know, what that person in these roles, the mayor, the governor, what they need to do. We're looking for the right people. Do you know anybody in the Republican Party or that would be able to stand in the gap to challenge Governor Pritzker and be able to win in the state of Illinois, what would it take?
I think it's going to take a lot of money. And yeah. Pritzker clearly has a lot of money. And, you know, things are really against you because it's a slated one-party state. One of the reasons why I think it's important to recruit good candidates and we all be supportive of them in their efforts, because it's possible to win in Illinois.
It is.
You know, people have been asking me to run for mayor of Chicago or maybe U.S. Senate. And statewide, you can win. You got to get the collar counties. You got to get downstate. And then you got to run it up 20% in Cook County. And it's all feasible. It's possible with the right message and the right group of people who are willing to support your efforts. And, you know, I started the Caldwell Institute for Public Safety at CaldwellInstitute.org. I encourage people to go to our website and support our efforts there. But I started the Caldwell Institute for that very purpose, because we need to align the right people, get behind the right folks in these particular offices. And in the case of the Caldwell Institute for Public Safety, our goal is to remove every George Soros-funded prosecutor in the nation. People like Alvin Bragg, people like Larry Krausner in Philadelphia.
Kim Gardner like in St. Louis. Yeah.
Exactly. And yeah. I keep hearing about Kim Gardner. And I'll tell you, like, even we got involved in the George Gascon race in Los Angeles County, got heavily behind Nathan Hochman, invested in that campaign greatly, and he won. And that's one off the board, but we have a lot more to go. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we appreciate all the support from everyone around the country, but we continue on. The fight just begun.
Gianno Caldwell with us right now. His new book, The Day My Brother Was Murdered, My Journey Through America's Violent Crime Crisis. Just to wrap up here, run for Senate and I'm your downstate girl. I will help you. Well, I would love that. I will do whatever, run through brick walls. I will show up wherever. I will drive the state and I will support you, Gianno.
No, we should definitely talk, and perhaps we should do an event together as well. So let's definitely arrange that.
Okay. Well, my people are already calling your people, and we will continue to do that. Gianno Caldwell, thank you so much for the time. We're going to get you back on here again soon.
Thank you for having me, and please follow me on social media at Gianno Caldwell, G-I-A-N-N-O, Caldwell, C-A-L-D-W-E-L-L. Thank you so much.
Amen. Thank you so much. Gianno Caldwell of Fox News, political analyst and founder of the Caldwell Institute for Public Safety. Something that a tragedy that he's experienced, and he has taken the time to experience just an absolute devastating heartbreak in the loss of his 18-year-old brother. Because he was in the wrong place at the wrong time and, you know, he was shot, he was killed. And Gianno's like, yeah, I'm going to do something about this. And I'm pushing him to run for something big. I think Gianno Caldwell running for Senate in the state of Illinois. Listen, there are probably other people out there who want to run for Senate, maybe who have said that they're going to or whatever. We need real good candidates. The more the merrier. But Gianno Caldwell could be a showstopper. The Dick Durbin seat is not supposed to flip to Democrat in the Senate. Right? Or to Republican in the Senate. Dick Durbin retiring this year, vacating that seat so he's not running again. That's not a seat. Nobody is looking at that seat going, I think we could win Illinois on the Republican side. But why not try? And with Donald Trump in office, with Gianno Caldwell and his very, very compelling story, his understanding of the political landscape, a true understanding of what Illinois is about, he is exactly right. You have to win downstate. We can handle that. You need 20% of Cook County. You think Gianno Caldwell can't? I mean, Darren Bailey won 18, 19%, I think, of Cook County, something close like that for governor. It was close. It was wildly closer than a lot of people thought he was going to get. And that's up against the Democrat machine. Maybe it was 17%. I don't know. But it was not embarrassing. And Gianno Caldwell, can he perform better in Cook County? He can. Get on the Gianno Caldwell bandwagon.
I'm on it.
I haven't talked to him about this yet. That was our first discussion.
Really?
About it. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I put him on the spot.
Yeah, you did. I thought, wow.
I'm like, you're running for Senate, and I'm helping you out. And he's like, let's get together.
Well, he said, let's do an event.
Yeah.
So I'm like, great.
I really want him to run for governor, because I think that's more winnable than Senate.
Okay. I'll take either or, Annie.
Either or, Annie. I think... I see people throwing their hat in the ring for governor. I've said before to Blaine Willauer, and in the past he's been like, you need to talk to my wife. I think maybe, I don't know. I don't know if Blaine's going to announce. I've texted him some things. He hasn't responded to my text. He usually does. He'll respond to my text to other things. I'm like, are you running for governor? And he hasn't told me yet. People are talking about it, but anytime it becomes presidential primary season, and you got somebody, like, you'll be watching the news channels, and they'll be, the last question will be like, Ryan Wiggins, are you considering a run for president? And then they're like, oh, well.
Well, I'm focused on my constituents right now in the 34th.
Yeah. Or, you know, I would pray a lot about that, but right now I'm focused on whatever cause I'm on this TV radio show for.
My book.
Yes. On making money. But you got to make money in order to win, too. So, yeah. Illinois shifted to Donald Trump in 2024 in a real way. The state of Illinois has so gerrymandered the state that even with a strong shift towards Republicans, a significant increase in Republican votes, it didn't manifest itself in any way. Everything stayed the same. And that's because they got to draw the maps after the last census. We really, really, really need to do a better job going into 2030 when the next census would happen so that we can rectify that. I'm pretty sure they're going to like draw certain areas of the state of Illinois into like districts in Kentucky next. Like, you guys just go vote for Thomas Massey.
But we'll take your tax money.
All of it. Doesn't Kentucky have no income tax?
No, they do.
Really?
Tennessee doesn't.
Kentucky does?
Well, I'd have to look that up, but I'm pretty sure they don't.
What are Rand Paul and Thomas Massey even doing?
Yeah, Rand
Start
Paul.
Start at home.
What the
unless,
heck?
Unless you're wrong about that. Let's take a quick break. YouTube live chat poll. How much destruction did the airstrikes cause to Iran's nuclear facilities? Set back for months, set back for years, or obliterated? Go vote on the Annie Fry YouTube channel and tell us what your thoughts are on it. Janine says, best guess is set back for years. I feel like obliterated means no coming back, but they have a lot of money, so they can come back, but it will take a while. Ron said, setback for years is my vote. No way to prove more at this point. And Officer Gary said, we don't know for sure without a battle damage assessment, but with that much ordnance, I would say years. Let us know what you think. We'll be back in a minute. Can't take my... So we aired the press conference a little bit earlier in the show, right? Kind of at the start of the show. And one of the things was there was a question about providing the Patriot defense system to Ukraine. Are you kind of like, oh, yeah, Ukraine?
Yeah, a little bit. That's still going on.
Putin called Trump, according to Trump, Putin called Trump and was like, hey, you need any help with Iran? And Trump's response was, I need help with you. He said to Putin, no, I need help getting something done with you. What does it mean to you that Vladimir Putin, while Donald Trump is denuclearizing Iran, what does it mean for Vladimir Putin to be like, okay, Don, you need any help over there?
Well, Iran and Russia have been tied at the hip for a long time. So I think it was Putin kind of saying, hey, let's be on good terms as you do whatever you're about to do, because we don't want to be associated with it, even though we are. That's the way I read that.
What do you mean you don't want to be associated with it?
Well, if you find things there that happen to have Russian on them.
Oh. You're saying he's trying to establish the good graces to say, hey, if there's a question about which side I'm on right now.
I'm with you, buddy. But I also like that they're talking.
Proud to be an American.
Yeah, he started singing Lee Greenwood to Donald Trump.
In Russian. I wish I could do a Russian Lee Greenwood. That might be the most un-American thing ever said.
Yeah, somebody's going, whoa. I'm not down
AI
with
out there somewhere can do Vladimir Putin in a Russian accent singing, I'm proud to be an American. Balls, I'm looking at you.
I'm glad to see them talking, though. To see them have that relationship. I would hope that every world leader does talk with Trump like this, because it means that they're probably having conversations that we're not always aware of. And that's good. We don't need to know every single thing that's happening all the time. We'll hear when we need to hear. That's the good thing about trusting the guy in charge right now.
I think it's important to take the opportunity to watch this next clip, because at the press conference, the NATO press conference yesterday, there was a Ukrainian reporter that President Trump called on, And, you know, I think there are people who believe that Donald Trump is sympathetic towards Vladimir Putin, sympathetic towards Russia, and anti-Ukraine. Donald Trump continuously says very flattering, kind things about Zelensky these days. Almost excessively. Almost like Daddy says. It's almost too much. In my interpretation, it's like, okay, you're trying to prove a point here. I get it. My opinion or my perspective on President Trump's relationship with Ukraine is that he has gotten to a place where he and Zelensky are on the same page and trying to get to the same outcome, that whatever has happened in their relationship leading up to this moment, they've gotten some things out of the way. And Donald Trump really wants an end to this war, knows that Russia is killing Ukrainians and Ukrainians are defending their existence right now and needs to push back. But the only way that Vladimir Putin is going to stop is if somebody talks to him and dignifies him with the conversation.
Yeah, because he's not going to do anything if he feels like, A, anybody else is getting the win besides him, which is why all the talk about, oh, if Donald Trump could solve this and bring about world peace, he'd get a Nobel Peace Prize. I hate that talk.
I don't care about the Nobel Peace Exactly. Prize at all. Just stop. Like, if he gets it, he should. I mean, look who's gotten the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah, who cares?
It's not. Yeah. We don't need to talk about Nobel. If he gets it. Cheers all around.
But that's the kind of stuff.
That's not why he's doing it.
Putin sees that and goes, I'm not going to give that to Donald Trump. You know, he doesn't want there to be anybody getting any wins for anything other than him. So as long as he feels respected, then there's maybe forward movement. We don't know, but it has to start there.
But it's also, if Donald Trump, like, people don't like that Donald Trump has dignified Vladimir Putin with enough respect to have a conversation.
Correct.
I get it. In an emotional place, I understand that perspective. Looking at what Vladimir Putin has done as a psychotic, murderous dictator, I get it. But do you want the war to stop? Do you want the war to stop? Do you want the killing to stop? I don't think that Donald Trump is compromising himself by being willing to rise above the conflict and do what needs to be done to stop the killing. And if Zelensky is on board as the leader of Ukraine with what Donald Trump is trying to do, that feels pretty pro-Ukraine to me. Now, this is all to say that yesterday at this press conference, at this NATO press conference, there was a Ukrainian reporter. And if you're listening right now, make sure you find this on social media. We're going to share the video here on our YouTube channel as well. But I want you to see how Donald Trump approaches this Ukrainian woman in this room full of NATO reporters and leaders.
I'm from Ukraine.
Oh,
so my question to you is whether or not the U.S. is ready to sell anti-air missile systems Patriot to Ukraine. We know that Russia has been pounding Ukraine really heavily right now.
Are you living yourself now in Ukraine?
My husband is there.
Wow.
And
I can see you're very, you know, it's amazing.
And me with the kids, I'm in Warsaw actually, because he wanted me to
be. Is your husband a soldier? No?
He's
there now?
Yeah.
Wow. That's rough stuff, right? That's tough. And you're living here?
In Warsaw.
And you're a reporter?
I am.
Good. So let me just tell you, they do want to have the anti-missile missiles, okay, as they call them, the Patriots. And we're going to see if we can make some available. You know, they're very hard to get. We need them too. We were supplying them to Israel, and they're very effective, 100% effective. Hard to believe how effective. And they do want that more than any other thing, as you probably know. That's a very good question. And I wish you a lot of luck. I mean, I can see it's very upsetting to you. So.
So you can't hear it, but she mouths to him, thank you. It's a pretty human experience. It's a pretty human interaction there. And I think that the human connection that Donald Trump made with that reporter right there, and that reporter's boldness in asking that question. You are a reporter for Ukraine with an audience of the President of the United States, and you're like, would you give us Patriot missiles? And he saw the humanity in that, and he said, we're looking at it. I was emotionally moved to watch that woman talk about her husband being back in Ukraine. She's, did she say Brussels, I think it was, or something like that, with her child. She's not in Ukraine. Her husband wanted her to move. God bless America. We do not know what that existence is like. And Donald Trump's reaction, he connected to her as a human before he spoke as the president of the United States.
Going back to last Friday's Annie Fry poll question was, is President Trump humble? Those moments are the ones that make me say, well, I don't know if humility is the right word or not, but he has a heart and you can see it. And that's not always the portrayal, I think, that even he wants. He wants to look tough most of the time. He wants to look like he's the hard negotiator, which he is.
But it seems to me like that's the active personification of Donald Trump. But this, to me, exists.
Once in a while, it shows up.
I think it exists 100% of the time. Once in a while, we get to see it.
That's right.
It's not once in a while it comes out. Once in a while, we get to see this. And you know this, and I know this, that we have people come in here, come on the show, people we meet in our endeavors throughout our business that are connected to the president, who have worked with him, been with him, experienced Donald Trump over the years, and they all say the same thing. That he is an incredibly kind and generous person. And, you know, I think you're right. He doesn't really, he can't do his job better if he does that stuff all the time.
Right.
But I think that stuff is there all the time. He just doesn't need, he doesn't need to, you know, do the tap dance in front of the American people to pretend that he's something, because he is it. And if you look at the converse, and I'd say it's pretty bipartisan, probably, you could say that the left is trying to do that, but I think that that would be short-sighted and just a partisan comment, that the people who run for office often on the left and the right get an opportunity like that, and then they're, then it's like, that's who that person is, and they try to manifest situations like that over and over and over again, and it's a show. And they're asking you to buy tickets to the show. Donald Trump doesn't need to earn your vote again. This is who this man is, and I think that because that's who he is, and it's not how he fronts all the time, that he is strong, he is bombastic. I think that's the personification he chooses to actively show, but I think that when this cuts through, for every one time we see that, how many times has that type of an exchange that involves potentially even more generosity, how many times has that happened?
The opposite point, real quick, too. We just saw this, that when he gets really mad, he's not reckless, which that's the way he's painted, too. And it's not the case. You would have seen it last week. He dropped the F-bomb. That's as bad as it got.
Well, there were the other bombs, but.
Well. But he was restrained.
We'll be right back. Don't go ahead.